Okay, Alex, we're going to start for real now. You have to start being quiet, or I'm going to call Mommy and Amy to come drag you out of here. Yeah. Okay?
Okay. Got it.
No, you can't do that. Nope.
Why? Why?
Because it's very distracting and audible.
Before the beginning of show, so you don't have to get it in music.
Okay, are you quiet yet?
I'm gonna be have some music.
No, no music.
I'm gonna be the music.
No, you're not gonna be the music.
So you don't have to edit. Do you want to edit this or not? Would you rather edit it or not edit it as much?
No music from you.
So I am going to be the music for the intro.
Quiet or you
I'm
gotta go?
I'm gonna be part of the podcast. Let me be part of podcast too.
Not this time. You were last week. You were
I want to be part of podcast every week. I can.
Not every week, okay,
why?
Dude? You can help say goodbye at the end.
No.
For sure. Okay. Okay. Quiet.
Welcome to the worst podcast on earth, Curmudgeon's Corner. The agenda for today is...
Okay.
I do not know!
Well, that's why I'm here.
Okay, the stupid podcast!
Okay, thank
First
you.
First podcast on Earth.
Thank you for the marketing intro, really. You know,
Alex,
yes, fantastic.
Seth Moe and Yvonne Bo.
So, the agenda, we're going to have this starter segment, and... I guess we're going to talk a little bit about the fact, Yvonne, you were in Singapore, and it was your first time in Singapore, and I want to hear about that. Then, last week, while we recorded the show, you were at the big gun march in D.C., so we're going to talk about the gun march,
Wait, whoa. Did they actually march?
They
or
didn't.
Or were they just watching?
We didn't even walk. We were just watching it. But that's okay.
Okay.
You know, anyway.
So we'll talk about the big march, rally, whatever it was.
March is in March.
Whatever it was in D.C.
It was a rally.
Yep.
It was called a march.
And everything related to that issue. Then we're going to talk about Facebook, tech, privacy, ethics. We talked last week about Cambridge Analytica, but we'll sort of about the rest of things. We'll talk about the rest of it, not just Cambridge Analytica, but the tech industry in general and how it relates to privacy concerns and all that kind of stuff. And guess what? That's going to be it. And we will not talk about all the miscellaneous small developments in the Trump scandals this week.
We will do one single extra short segment in the middle.
No. Not this time.
Why? It's a me segment. They love me. They hate you, but they love me.
And when we get back from this break,
it'll just be
Yvonne and I talking.
No, it's not. It's going to be all of us.
Anyway, we'll be back after this break.
Don't forget to tune in at the middle for the extra short segment!
Okay.
Is that actually gonna happen?
No.
What about the video game segment?
Okay, you have
we
to.
We made the video game segment!
Okay, Alex.
Facebook, Facebook, Facebook! Hey, do you want to help support Curmudgeon's Corner? Well, right now, the best way is through Facebook. If you haven't already liked us on Facebook and you actually, like us, then go search for Curmudgeon's Corner on Facebook and like our page. It will help you see when we announce new episodes and it'll help us reach more new people too. If you like a particular episode, like our episode announcement post too, or share it with your friends. All of this helps spread the word about our podcast to more people who might like it as well. And of course, We love having a conversation with all of you listeners, so please use Facebook to leave comments on the shows, give us suggestions, or anything else like that. It's always great to hear from you. So, if you want to help the show, use Facebook. Or forget all of that and just send us money.
So, Yvonne, you were in Singapore?
Yes. First time that I went to Singapore.
How is it different from all your other Asian cities that you've been to lately?
Singapore is very orderly, quiet, very efficient, very, I mean, I don't, it's just, everything just seemed so polished in some way. I mean, I think everybody's heard about, for example, how, about litter, for example, how they, yes. The whole thing, how they banned gum and stuff like that. And look, everything is spotless. Okay. All right. In that city, number one, which in a lot of Asian cities, you get a lot of, or big city. I'm not going to say Asian cities, cities in general, big ones. You get a lot of garbage, noises, whatever, it's very clean. It's very orderly. So it was very different. I will say.
So did you get arrested for chewing gum or anything?
I don't chew gum. Plus, they don't sell it. Here's one other thing that was funny. So I went to Starbucks across from my hotel, go grab a cup of coffee. And, after I was texting with somebody or whatever. And I didn't remember, somebody all of a sudden mentioned to me the whole thing about the gum. And I hadn't thought about it. I realized that at Starbucks, they just didn't sell gum. Which they always sell gum at Starbucks, mm-hmm. So that was one thing. But the people were very, very pleasant. They were very, I've noticed that business is, they have a reputation for being one of the least corrupt countries in the world. It's probably, as far as I can tell from my conversations with a whole bunch of people, it's quite well deserved, So I thought it was cool. I went to this place where it's this famous place they just built in the last 8 years called the Marina Bay Sands, where they have this. It's this massive hotel. It's got about 3,000 rooms. It's insane. It's this huge tower. It's incredibly cool looking. Okay, mm-hmm. And they have this roof. They have this thing at the top, which is this pool and bar and restaurant. So you see everything. You can see, you see the all the ships. I mean, the port is so busy. That's one thing that's just bonkers. It's just how busy that port is. I mean, the amount of ships that I saw like waiting to get to that port. I just never seen a port as busy as that in my life. And, you can see all of that from there. And then you can see the rest of the city from there. It was just, it was really, really cool. I think one of the things is that a project like that happens in a place like Singapore. And I was not say in Puerto Rico, because, they really are business friendly. But you see, what I mean by business friendly is not that, for example, they don't care about the environment or that. I saw, actually, by the way, quite a lot of electric cars of European brands, which you don't see here in the U.S. I saw, for example, a whole bunch of Mercedes and all of these. Apparently, they have some version because they have stringent requirements for energy conservation and other things, mm-hmm. like that, for example. Another thing that I saw interesting, we talk about how they ask you, to save energy, to unplug your charging cords from the wall and whatever, which none of us do. It's just, too much work. But the one thing that they do, all the power strips that I kept being given and like almost all the wall switches have individual switches, so you can actually turn off that plug or the wall switch so you can turn it off in order to accomplish that. Mm-hmm. And I haven't seen that in any other country in the world. I haven't seen that in the U.S., I don't know if you've ever have, but it's the first place I've ever seen that.
So wait, you mean like there's a switch next to every plug?
Yeah, like by every plug, not the whole strip, but you get the strip and there's the switch at the end, but every plug has its own individual switch on the strip and also on the wall. If there's two sockets, there's switches for each socket. So you could turn off the socket.
And so the theory behind that, I guess, is like if you've got something that's just, you know, sucking power, but you're not using, you can just flip the switch instead of unplugging it.
Correct. Which, so, you know, plugging and unplugging is a pain in my butt. I mean, I've done that for certain things. That's a pain.
Right. And you've got,
you got a little switch right there. You go.
And you've got lots of devices that even when they're quote unquote off are still sucking a certain amount of power.
Right.
I guess so. I don't know. It makes sense, I guess. But I couldn't imagine, like, I mean, honestly, and I guess this shows me to be the insensitive energy waster that I am. I can't imagine taking the time to go flip that switch if the thing was off.
But I think that what it does is that for people that are at least conscious to it, it makes it, you know what? It makes it a hell of a lot easier to do.
Okay, I can see that.
I mean, you know, if you get, it's one of these things where I think that if you get just even a 30 to 40% take up rate, you know, 20%, it makes a big difference. You know, so I thought that was that part, it was very interesting. And the fact that I saw, you know, another thing, for example, their mass transit is very efficient. There's almost no traffic. And I was wondering, why is there almost no traffic? Because they issue only a limited number of permits for the number of vehicles that can be out there. And no vehicles over 10 years can be on the road. Mm-hmm. Once they reach 10 years, they need to be crushed and destroyed.
Okay. So now, of course, the criticism of all this, you know, like you said, everybody's heard the story of, like, you know, the penalties for littering or chewing gum or anything like that. Because basically, you know, you get caught throwing a wrapper on the street, you can be whipped for that or whatever, right?
Put in jail. Well, I guess in the extreme, the answer is yes. You know, it appears that is the case. Yes.
You seem impressed by this. Is it worth it? I guess.
No,
I
don't know. What I'm saying is that I've heard that in the extreme. What I've heard is that in practice, you know, that doesn't really happen very often.
Well, I guess they only have to do it a few times to make an example.
Well, I don't actually. I my understanding also is the current government is not like that anymore.
This is like a 10, 15 year old stereotype that we're talking about.
Correct. It's a democracy, and you know, it didn't used to be that way, but it is firmly a democracy right now. And I guess that's just not something that really happens anymore. Even though they may be strict about things such as, for example, that they still outlaw gum, for example. Mm-hmm. But that kind of like punishment just isn't, you know, what they do anymore that way. So I think that's the key.
And you didn't try pushing it by doing any illegal activities and seeing what happened?
No.
No, that wasn't in your plan.
That was not in the cards. Was to see, well, what can I do illegal in the country to see if I can get whipped or something? If they still do that, which it appears from what I heard, that it's just not anymore. I guess I tried to avoid that.
Or maybe some stuff that could get you put in jail or beheaded or something.
I'm trying not to get beheaded on any of these trips.
Do they behead people?
As far as I know,
I think this is other countries.
But even if they do, I'm not trying to test the waters in that space to see how far I can push it before I get beheaded.
Okay. Yeah. I don't. And by the way, I'm joking around. I don't want to say bad things about Singapore that are not true.
I really do appreciate that I don't get beheaded and that you're not really looking forward to me being beheaded. I do appreciate that on one of these trips, you're not looking for me to try to bail me out of some jail in Thailand where I'll be with a sex coach or something or whatever, since they're apparently.
Well, you have to go figure out how to interrogate that sex coach and find out what she knows. I mean,
so I need to go back to Thailand to find out about get the scoop on that.
You have to figure out how to get in the same cell.
But look at what happened. I went to Ecuador and they cut off Julian Assange's internet access.
I feel so bad for him.
I do you see a coincidence? I sure as hell do.
Okay. So enough about Singapore. And those of your travels. And Alex is being good and quiet now. We will take a quick break. And then we will come back to talk about All the gun marches across the country. And I should say, they're not like... They're more anti-gun marches or gun control marches.
There were marches for our lives. Like somebody said, some moron, you know, said that they don't know what it is for our lives. It's a march for our lives. It's to create a more safe nation for.
Anyway, we will talk about that and everything surrounding that when we come back for our next segment, and then the final segment will be about Facebook and such. We will be back right after this.
Do-do-do. Hello, this is Geraint. I'm here to let you know about Sam the Curmudgeon's other podcasts, the Wiki of the Day podcasts. Wiki of the Day comes in three varieties, popular, random, and featured. Each highlights a new Wikipedia article each day. They just pick the articles differently. This week on Random Wiki of the Day, you would have heard this summary for Stigmella ecclesiotifera. Stigmella ecclesiotifera is a moth of the Nepticulidae family. It is only known from the small island of Tsushima in Japan, but is probably also present in China. Living larvae were collected in mid-October and adults emerged in June of the next year. There are at least two generations per year in southern Japan. The larvae feed on Quercus variabilis. They mine the leaves of their host plant. The mine is similar to that of Stigmella fumida on the same host. That's it. See? Fun, entertaining, and the educational, right? Okay, now look for and subscribe to the Wiki of the Day family of podcasts on your podcast playing software of choice, or just go to wikioftheday.com to check out our archives. Now back to Curmudgeon's Corner. Do-do-do.
And we are back. Okay, so Yvonne, you actually took your whole family with you to make a special trip to go to D.C. and go to this march. So before we get to what actually you experienced at the march, and you went to the big one in D.C., I actually went to a small one here in Everett, Washington, and they were all over the country and, in fact, all over the world. But before we get into your actual experiences there, what in the world prompted you to say this is something that you feel strongly enough that you wanted to actually buy plane tickets and fly from Florida to D.C. to do this?
Well, first of all, since Trump had been elected, we had talked about it in our house, and we had said that we wanted to go to an event like this. Okay, so we had said that we wanted to at some point to make a showing that we would go to that. So that was something that was discussed in our house. The fact that the shooting in Parkland, it happened like barely 5 miles away from my son's school, that it actually impacted our community, that, you know, talking to somebody who is a child psychologist, who is a friend of ours, who right now is treating a whole bunch of kids from that school, for example, you know, and those things just really hit home. And maybe it's just, you know, it's not like we weren't like feeling for those others. And, you know, we had said that we wanted to go there for that, for an event to protest what's been going on in the nation. So this was a good opportunity. So this seemed like the right opportunity. And so this happened and it was announced. And, you know, my wife's like little brothers went to that school. Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, I mean, you know, these are kids from my community that, and I felt that, you know, maligned this generation, as I think we talked about this, about how generations keep being maligned on a regular basis. And, you know, how the older generation keeps maligning the younger one all the damn time. And, you know, these kids went out there and put themselves out you know, to get attacked in order to take a stand against this, that nobody else had seemed to be able to get as much traction as they have. And actually, even like some laws have actually been passed in the state of Florida,
right?
For that matter. You know, whereas before in any of these, nothing had happened.
I mean, you can talk about whether or not the particular things that were signed, how effective they would be, whatever. But the governor of Florida signed things that he wouldn't have dreamt of signing a few months ago.
Exactly. And I think that that's just, you know, that why, you know, all of a sudden I just felt like, you know, these kids went and took a stand that others haven't taken before and actually got something to happen that, you know, we were never able to get before. And they took a lot of risk by being targeted by a lot of trolls out there who, and right wingers who just hate them for just taking the stand, I guess. You know? Because they don't even read what the hell. They don't even care. I got into an argument online with my dad. I don't know if you saw it, that I basically told him to go screw himself.
I did see this.
You did see this? You know, because he didn't, as per usual, he didn't even fucking read the article. He didn't even read it. And he is attacking the people and not even engaging on what they are asking for, but attacking the people. And it's not just him. Somebody else on my Facebook did the same thing. Somebody that, you know, was on the periphery of being a friend, somebody that, a coworker of mine, that I basically had warned that if he ever, basically I had told him that if he ever sent anything like put, but he went on my timeline, and after I posted the pictures about going to the march, basically called you and everybody that went to the march a whole bunch of dumbasses. I fucking deleted his comment, I unfriended him, and I basically have said that I'm never talking to this asshole ever again. Because once again, another thing, not even listening for one second what the hell they are asking for. Not for one second. Just going and just sending this stupid, you know, hate of these people without even hearing what they want, and just attacking the people and not even considering the message. And this is the new normal right now. And I'm just really sick of it. And I thought it was important that these kids went out there and fucking, like, put themselves in the middle of this fucking firing line of this shit, that they should be supported. And I just, you know, thought it was important to do that.
Okay. So let's talk about the actual day of the event and what your experiences were there. Now, I did not fly out for this one to join you. I have been to big events in DC before. Not so much. Well, I mean, I probably have been to political rally type stuff when I was much younger. You know, anti-apartheid stuff with my parents or whatnot. But in more recent, you know, I've gone to a couple of inaugurations. I went to both.
I went to one with you.
You went to one with me. I went to both Bill Clinton inaugurations and the first George W. Bush inauguration. And then I missed the next one. And then I'm like, well, streak is over. Like, my intention had been to go to every inauguration since I was old enough to vote. And I managed three. And then the fourth one I missed, and then, well, too bad.
Well, I'm done. I guess it's a good thing that you got off that streak, because otherwise you would
have. In any case, because, hey, well, the whole point was, it doesn't matter whether I like the person or not.
It doesn't matter who
it's an historical
you.
Event.
I hear you.
But I went to the first three, and then I missed it. But so I've been to big events like that. My understanding of this march, they did not actually reserve the mall. They reserved an area adjacent to the
Pennsylvania,
mall.
It was Pennsylvania Avenue. Okay, right. It is between Lafayette Park and the street. You know, so you get that it goes straight to you know, you get the straight to the Capitol. So that was the space, and so you had access to it from the west side and from the north side. And I think there was access from the south side as well, but not from the east side, okay? Because that's really where they had set up the stage. And you know, it was pretty easy to access the event.
So did you get in the actual area itself? Because, like,
yes.
My father and stepmother also went, but I guess they started later or whatever, and they actually couldn't get to the actual official area because it was already full and they weren't letting more people in by the time they got there. So okay, they held their signs and stuff area. Out a few more blocks away from wherever the official area was.
Well, we got to the actual official area where you saw that picture that was being taken, right? Mm-hmm. Okay, where we were there. We were maybe further toward the back. We were right in front of the Trump International Hotel.
Okay.
And without seeing this, when we took the damn picture, we took a picture of all three of us that looked great. And then when I fucking look at the picture, the goddamn name of fucking Trump in big letters is right beside my son as he's sitting on top of my shoulders. And I'm like, I can't post this fucking picture. I hate this fucking picture. This is ridiculous.
You could have edited out the letters or something.
I you know what? Somebody that's better than me can edit out the letters. I'm not very good at editing out the fucking letters. Okay, so right now I'm just like, you know, I was just very, you know, I that really pissed me the fuck off.
Okay.
Damn it! I went over there because I, in large part because, you know, I don't like saying hate. I'm not somebody that hates people. Okay, like I just don't do that. But here, the problem that I have with this man, okay, is that he shits on everybody. Okay, all right, everywhere, and I just it is intolerable for me to have a person like that is leading our country. Okay, I have a difficult time just even listening to him talk. Because he keeps, you know, he keeps talking like how he's so smart, he's an idiot, and it just drives me crazy. But anyway, okay, so yeah, so having that picture with him there. So we were right in front of the Trump International Hotel, like a little bit further down there.
So how are the crowds? What kind of people did you see?
It was a huge crowd. I mean, it was really a big crowd. I mean, I was like, you know, I was walking, you know, at first when I'm walking and you know, we parked on like So what I did is that every other time, everybody said, you got to take the metro. You can't drive down there. It's impossible. Blah, blah, blah. So because I've done these big events before, and that's what we did. Look, every time you got one of those big events and you tried to get a metro train, you've been to this. You go down to the station. It's a freaking zoo. Every train comes in. People pile in like crazy. I'm like, I said, no, I'm not doing this. Every other time I've done that, it sucked. I'm going to drive. Okay. All right. The hell with it.
Okay.
And you know what? That was the right call.
You got in, you parked, no problem.
No problem. Because it's a Saturday. No, none of the offices are open. There were plenty of parking garages open. Pretty damn a few blocks away from it. There was no traffic coming in from the suburbs because nobody's going in for work. Because
everybody who is taking the metro.
The damn metro to freaking go to the freaking march anyway, so therefore the traffic was stupidly light.
Okay.
So I got in with no problem. I parked pretty close to the White House. I walked, you know, the few blocks that needed to be walked to get to a march. I actually got a picture of Manu and my wife in front of the White House. Okay, you know, explain to our son that, you know, we really like the place, but we just don't like who's living there right now.
Okay.
No, and you know, yeah. So you know. So
now, did you talk to anybody else in the crowd? Did you have conversations or?
You know, I had the map, so I knew where to march. You know, where the area is, where the march was officially. So we got, you know, we continued walking and we crossed Lafayette Square and we got to the official area where the march was.
So did you talk to people though? Did you talk to other people in the crowd? Did you interact with anybody or was it just you know?
Not really, because the rally was going on, okay, which, by the way, it was a rally. There was no marching. I thought that there would be
Because it was too full, right? Because they filled up the entire space they were going to march, right?
It was completely full. There was no way to do a march, okay? So you know, we had the rally, and
So could you hear? Could you see? Like
Yes. You could, well, look, they had video screens to help. I got Manu on top of my shoulders. You could see where the stage was and whatever, but it was pretty far. But they actually had set a number of video screens so you could see, you know, from where you were further out. So we were able to see it it was more easy to see on the screens than it was to see physically, obviously. But, you know,
were you there for all the big speeches that we've all seen?
Yes.
So the big one I'm going to ask you about is the Emma Gonzalez speech where she went silent.
Yeah.
I know what the effect of that was watching on TV. I mean, it was devastating. How was it in person?
That's the same it was when we were there. I mean, it was just, you know, to have that many people all of a sudden just go cricket silent.
Well, because the interesting part of it to me was since she did not announce at all, like she's not like, I'm going to do a moment of silence. She was just talking and then she stopped.
And then she went silent. And the thing is, and I know that it took a few of us off. It took me off guard when she went silent. And but everybody just all of a sudden, I know that some people started making a couple of noises like afterwards because they didn't realize it. And everybody just quickly hushed and just went silent and understood finally what was going on.
Yeah, I mean, when I was listening, I mean, I was listening just on headphones, just on audio when it happened live. Yeah. And I didn't even realize. I just suddenly there was just noise. It's just like crowd noise. And I was like, what's going on? And then I went back to watch the video later. And when I watched the video later, you could tell like the first 30 seconds to a minute, you know, there were a few people chanting or saying, Emma, or whatever.
And then we all like started hushing all those people really relatively quickly.
And then you sort of realized, what the hell is she doing? And, you know, I tweeted, like, that's got to be, like, the most powerful moment of television I remember seeing. You know, at least of live television.
It was extremely powerful when we were there. Okay. I mean, my wife and I, we were holding hands when that happened. And it actually, at that point, she had our son. We had, like, I had him on my shoulder so he wanted to see. Okay, so I had him on my shoulders for a while, and then she had him on her shoulders for a while. So he got a better view than we did. And, you know, I mean, even he understood, you know, the silence itself, you know, how everybody just all of a sudden went quiet. I mean, so, yeah, I mean, it was, you know.
You know, and she's up there crying. I mean, I was bawling every time I've seen clips of that. I mean, even now I'm all like getting all emotional. It's just like the raw emotion of that moment was just, you know.
And, you know, and there's this massive group of people that hate them, I guess, for being alive. I mean, I don't know, for having an opinion. I mean, I'm trying to understand.
Well, I mean, and I guess now let's
remember, and we're talking about they hate them. It's not that they're saying that they disagree with their opinion. They are actively going out there and spewing hate on them.
Well, okay? This is the thing. I mean, I have seen some, you know, of the usual, like, just two sides debating on gun control and blah, blah, blah. But you're right. There's been a significant amount of just personal animus against these kids.
Yes.
And just direct personal attacks on them.
Yep.
You know, and that's,
I mean, she's a lesbian skinhead. One person called her or something. I don't know if you recall hearing that one from this.
I do. One of her friends from school said, she's actually bisexual. If you're going to do this, at least get it right. but you know, the thing is, there's always been sort of this personal element about these kinds of debates, because it is a highly emotional debate for people on all sides of the issue. Because on the one hand, you've got sort of the liberal gun control side saying, this is ridiculous, people keep getting shot, let's get rid of the guns, or let's at least restrict them. And then you've got the Second Amendment folks who really, really very deeply believe that this is a crucial right, that it is important to defend, and these people are trying to take that away.
Okay, and that's fine. I don't have a problem with that, but that's not what they're saying.
Okay.
You see?
So
what they're saying is that they're calling, you know, them publicity hounds. They're saying, why aren't they crying? How could they be happy? How could they be showing a picture, a moment of happiness? They've shown them, they've doctored pictures of them like ripping a gun target, to them ripping like the Constitution. All sorts of stuff like this. This is like, I mean, seriously. Questioning their grades, questioning where they're going to school, questioning their motives, saying that they are being coached by the Democratic Party, all sorts of stuff like this. I mean, this is the stuff that I'm talking about. This has nothing to do with saying.
Although the one thing I will say about them being coached by the Democrats is I'm sure they've got They got help for the rally.
No, right.
They've definitely, you know, they've got adult help. They've talked about how they have adult help, but
yes.
But one thing, you know, they have been so much more effective than any fucking Democrat has been in the last 20 years.
Right.
Like they're not coaching the Democrat. I mean, the Democrats aren't coaching them. They're coaching the Democrats.
Exactly. Exactly.
They're
correct.
Teaching Democrats how to play this game.
Yes.
And
totally,
and you can
100%.
You can see the various conservatives that are reacting against them not knowing how to handle them.
Right.
And whereas, you know, and I saw like Oliver Willis on Twitter, you know, quite a liberal guy, but you know, he's been he had a bunch of tweets in the last 24 hours basically, you know, celebrating this, basically saying, look, you know, the normal way liberals react to this kind of this gun control debate,
it never worked,
is they may say a few things right after one of these events, but then they kind of run and hide because right. they've been beaten on it so often. They just right. don't want to play the game. And these kids are having none of it. They're not letting the conversation get shut down. They're not paying attention to, they're not being sensitive about thoughts and prayers, or this isn't the time to have this discussion, or don't politicize it, or anything like that. You know, because regular old Democrats have shied away from that and have been afraid and haven't pushed this. And these kids are like having none of that.
Correct. And that's what I love about them. You know, totally. That's what I love about them.
Now, so, you know, and look, you know, I of the ones I've seen on TV a lot, Emma's my favorite. I'll admit, I think she's the most poised and most effective. Like, you know, the David kid. He seems like he might actually be a bit of a dick, but you know, he's still effective.
So what? Whatever. I mean,
but that's his right. You know, and even within that, even in being like, okay, I can see how he's a little annoying, maybe. He's damn effective, and they yeah. know what, and they know how to do this. I mean, this thing with Laura Ingraham that's been going on the last 24 hours, where she's the one who made the comments about, haha, you didn't get into school, blah, blah, blah. And, you know, he replied by calling for a boycott, and like, as of last count I saw, 7 or 8 advertisers have pulled out of her show. It's like,
and then she, and now she decided to apologize.
Right. And it's like, you know, and I saw another comment, I think from Nate Silver at 538, basically saying, look, a lot of, you know, pundits are sort of made nervous about this. Look, they're kids. They will make mistakes. They have some missteps. Sometimes their communications aren't perfect. However, they're doing this at least as well, and probably better than professional politicians who've been doing this all their lives.
Oh, hell yes. Totally.
And,
absolutely.
And so that makes your
you know, one thing that I got to say that I think is a big factor. Okay. All right. In this is, look, they are very, you know, this is a generation that has been completely brought up with the new ways of communication. Okay. In social media, technology, and so forth. And they have proven to be far more adept and you know, well versed in how to use it very well.
Mm-hmm.
You know, beating everybody. So, you know, I think that's the key, I think, of their success, is that they, you know, they come from a different generation that's used to, you know what, I was listening today to somebody that's in her 20s that works in sports radio.
Okay.
But she's a very smart lady. She, you know, she graduated, I think it was from, if it wasn't from Harvard, but it was an Ivy League school. She's very educated. She's very articulate. And one of the things that we're talking about is, you know, some of the main hosts on the program are about our age. Okay. All right. Because we're old people now. So we're the establishment.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We're getting to be the establishment, not completely, but anyway. And so we're talking about going on vacation, and sometimes how I know that I've gone multiple times where I just completely disconnect. I don't have my phone with me or something or whatever or anything, and I'm like, whatever. And she said, you know, look, I hear you guys say that. I don't think you understand. I've grown up like this. I can't do this. I don't know even how. Mm-hmm. I can't go and disconnect. And every time I see a message on Twitter or something, whatever, I feel compelled to react. I need to act on it. So I think the thing is that they are so, you know, whereas I don't think she's like some people, obviously, what their reaction to being attacked online is different one way or another. Some people react differently, as Sam has seen. I have certain reactions. But the thing is that I think that these kids, obviously, I think that their level of tolerance in terms of being attacked online is probably far higher than for anybody else. And they know how to react.
Right. They know how to flip it right back on whoever's attacking them.
Right.
Instead of just, you know, I'm going to mute them. I'm going to block them. I'm going to, like, you know, report them, or I'm going to whatever, or I'm going to complain about them in some way. No, you just get into the shuffle and
exactly.
attack back. And,
yes.
And, you know, and they're also used to the fact that, yeah, this may be a senator. This may be some guy that's got a TV show. That doesn't matter. I can answer him just as much. I don't have to like be like, oh, well, he's a big, important guy and I have to respect that. Fuck that.
Screw that.
You know, so I'm very amused by that. Now, I do want to move for a few seconds before we end this segment. You'd mentioned a few times, you know, that's not what they're asking for. That's not this. That's not, and they did have a specific list of things. They had a series
of specific list of things. Yes. I mean, and they spoke and they mentioned them when we were there, you know, banning of assault rifles, raising the age to 21 to purchase weapons, expanded, you know, background checks, you know, eliminate the gun show loopholes. Those are the things that they're talking about.
And
the thing is that.
And they're all things that, by the way, they're all things
have
that
a lot of support.
Well, not only do they have a lot of support, but they're all things that previous court cases that have gone to the Supreme Court have said are within scope of the Second Amendment, that are limits
exactly.
that are allowed. Now, the current court is made up a little bit differently than the courts that had those rulings in the past. So if it went up again, it might not get the same result. But they are things that, you know,
have been deemed constitutional.
Right. I mean, we had an assault weapons ban for a while and it expired, but there were court, there were court cases about that and it was deemed to be okay. Famously, even Judge Scalia, who's known for not being a liberal, has made comments about how these, you know, restrictions are allowed of these sorts. In terms of what was officially being talked about at the march, they specifically were somewhat constrained, carefully chosen. Now, there are a few areas there that, you know, could be debated even within things like I saw some people who are advocates for people with mental illness saying that the way they talked about restrictions for those with mental illness was done in a way that was very ham-handed and doesn't take into account that, like, most people with mental illnesses are perfectly safe.
Right.
So I don't want to get – my point is, like, it wasn't perfect, but they tried to be very selective in what they were asking. But the response to it, of course, as you were saying, was completely like takes it like five levels beyond what they were actually asking. And so one of the interesting things that's happened this week, and it started to happen before this, but, you know, you have the people, you know, the Second Amendment folks saying, you know, oh, they just want to take our guns. And usually you have the liberal response of saying, No, we don't want to repeal the Second Amendment. We don't want to come after your guns, blah, blah, blah. We want these reasonable controls that, you know, vast majorities of the public agree on. But more and more, I'm actually seeing lots of people responding to that with, well, actually, yes, we do want your guns. or...
Yeah, we, you know, look, if you ask me, yes, I do want your guns, and I would repeal the fucking Second Amendment.
And
but
we
I don't think...
And we had a former Supreme Court justice come out with an article calling for the repeal of the Second Amendment and several others. So, like, that counter of... Yeah, now I think the majority of folks who are pushing gun control measures are still thinking about let's do these constrained things. But there is certainly an angry undercurrent that is growing and becoming more vocal that is basically saying, fuck that shit. We've been talking about these sort of reasonable limitations for decades, and I haven't been going anywhere. Yeah, we want the whole shebang. We do want to get rid of the Second Amendment. We do want to take your guns. And I think those are a minority right now, but they're getting louder.
I mean, I would say that, you know, if you ask me, like, flat out, what the... I mean, I would be okay if we get rid of it. However, I mean, that's not what I'm asking, like, right now. But, yeah, I'd be like, you know, I would not be... If somebody proposed, say, let's get rid of the Second Amendment, I would say... Okay, I'm fine. And you know, the one reason I say this is, look, Second Amendment, the way that it, when it was written, the way it's written right now is pretty much useless. Look, our military, you want to go up against the military? Our military has F-22 fighters. They've got, you know, attack helicopters, a whole bunch of shit that, you know what, you cannot buy. You're not legally allowed to buy. What the fuck are you going to do with a couple of guns to go up against the government and do what? What are you doing right now? Back then, it was different. You know, it was very different. But like right now, in terms of your right to bear arms and what you're able to do to take down the government, like right now, well, I mean, you don't have a shot. Well, you don't with what how the law is written right now and what you can buy. You have zero shot. So if the whole goal of the whole goal of that when written was because we were under the tyranny of the British and people, you know, wanted to be able to rise against the government. And so they could not do that without the weapons. And apparently, I believe under the British, they didn't have that right. And so that's why they put that right there.
Well, that's one of the things that one of the problems with the way the Second Amendment was written is it's relatively vaguely written. And the historical documentation of people's thoughts about it is conflicting. And there's not as much of it as you'd think there was, because apparently people thought it was relatively clear, I guess. I don't know. And so there's a lot of ambiguity over whether it's what you just meant or whether it's, you know, regulation of an actual, like, here's the militia that we're going to call up when we need to do things or what. And there's legitimate historical discussion on those terms. But you're right. One of the common arguments that is brought up repeatedly is this. It's part of, you know, being able to defend against tyranny if the situation arises that you need it. Now, there are other arguments as well. That's not the only one.
But that, as I remember, was the main reason it was written for.
Well, and I've always said that's the, to me, of all the pro Second Amendment arguments, that's actually the most compelling to me. Like the ones for just, you know, personal self-defense or hunting or whatever, I'm like, ah, screw that, I don't care. You know,
because you know, guns have never been proven anywhere to be a really good self-defense.
Right. So anyway, thing. But the thing is, the counter argument, and I mentioned this a few shows back, I think with one of the ones Ed was on, maybe, but the counter argument that I've heard a lot recently is, you know, okay, you may not be able to fight the U.S. military in an out-and-out battle. However, you know, there are folks with basically nothing more than small arms that have certainly given the U.S. military a hell of a fight in all kinds of places. In Syria, in Iraq, in Vietnam, for that matter. I mean, they had some more stuff in Vietnam, don't get me wrong. But all of these sort of counterinsurgency kinds of things, where very often, I mean, you are having people who have relatively weak weapons and improvised explosives and all of that kind of stuff. And maybe they didn't beat the U.S., but they gave us a hell of a hard time. And sometimes stopped us from declaring a clear victory. So the argument being that if this situation ever did arise, you know, maybe it's not enough to overthrow the government, but it's enough for a guerrilla movement. But, you know, I listen to that and I'm like, these are the crazy people.
Right.
You know, the people who are doing this, this is those little militias that you hear about every yes. once in a while taking yep. over, you know, the fort in the national park or whatever. Right. And the only
people that they're not blown away is because, you know, we're trying not to make a situation worse.
And look, the real situation here is, look, actually, like, rebelling in that way and overthrowing, you know, a national U.S. government that has become tyrannical would be a horrible, horrible mess that would...
It would be a civil war again.
It would be another civil war, and it would be very, very bad.
Get the military to defect. A good point.
This is why if you're worried about the government becoming a tyranny... What you do is you get involved, you vote, you get your people in, you get, you know, there are all sorts of processes whereby you can you can do things through a peaceful process. And that includes sometimes accepting when things go the other way and not the way you wanted. And, you know, and not resorting to violence. If you resort to violence, you've already completely lost. The whole thing is over at that point. We can't have, okay, we have to defend ourselves against tyranny by making sure that everybody is armed to the level that they can fight the government. That's just a bad outcome. We have to instead say, encourage civic involvement and make sure everybody feels included. And our system certainly has not been even good at that, let alone perfect. There are huge groups that feel marginalized and excluded and all of this kind of stuff. But arming them is not the way to solve that problem.
Probably not.
But anyway, no, but my point was, I actually find it interesting that the debate is moving to the point where there is a significant movement on the left at this point that says, fuck you. Yes, we do want to get rid of the Second Amendment. Yes, we do want to come after your guns. And so it leaves sort of the people in the middle who have been saying, no, don't worry. We don't want to take your guns. We just want to have reasonable controls, blah, 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 sort of flapping in the wind a little bit. I think they're still the majority, but it makes it harder to make that case the more, because this is another example of things getting increasingly polarized. Because the middle ground in this debate is getting drowned out by both sides.
But I don't think it is. I think there's people saying that. But look, there was a Fox News poll that I pulled up that showed that, for example, the measures that these kids proposed, okay, have overwhelming –
like have 70-80% support in most cases, yeah.
Across the board. These are not unpopular things. I'm still baffled as to why politics... I mean, is the NRA money that good?
Well, what's interesting in many of these cases is that even if you restrict the polls to gun owners, there's majority support for many of these things.
Right. That's why I am so baffled as to what the hell is the deal with these guys. I mean, is it, you know, I just don't get it. I mean, is the NRA money that good? Seriously, is that what it is?
Well, I think part of it's, yeah, I'm sure the NRA money doesn't hurt. But part of it is that this issue has become one of those polarized issues where
remember 20 years ago, if somebody had polled that high, they'd be running through legislation in 2 seconds.
Right, but remember the critical part on the Republican side, and this is true to some degree on the Democratic side too, on their issues, but is that it's not the polling over to overall population. It's not even the polling amongst Republicans. It's not the polling amongst gun owners. What matters is two groups, primary voters and donors.
Right.
And those two groups feel much more strongly about this issue than the larger population.
How about I bet that even those groups have majority support on those? With the numbers I saw, there is no way it doesn't.
I'm not so sure. But it's getting closer, I think. As you look at the trends in these support numbers over the years, it's definitely moving away from the NRA position. Let's put it that way. And the NRA position is also important to note.
But the NRA has turned insane as well.
That's what I was going to say. The NRA position is also moved. If you go back to the 70s or 80s, the NRA was a much more moderate organization than it is today.
But the NRA was an organization to promote like safe gun ownership, to help people understand how to own guns. I mean, I remember...
I'm not saying they were ever liberal, but they certainly are much more extreme now than they were Second Amendment people.
But the thing is, but they weren't rabid insane like they are right now. I mean, they have the spokesperson out there that seriously has been like making if she was Hispanic or black, they would have said that she's a terrorist. I mean, if she was wearing a turban for a Muslim, she would have said it's a terrorist. I mean, she was making terroristic threats to people.
Mm.
I mean, in our videos, I'm going, seriously? I mean, what is wrong with these people?
So one of the interesting things we will find out soon enough are, do these kids and the movement they've started, how well do they continue? You know, now I've seen them list their plans going out months and months in the future and specific... things they want to continue to do over the course of the next year. So they've certainly got plans to keep up the pressure. The question is, how well will they be able to actually do that? How well does this continue? I suspect at this point, this starts getting all mixed in with the 2018 midterm elections.
Yeah.
And so I don't see it dropping in the same way that it has before, because whether the Democrats like it or not, these kids are going to force this to be one of the election issues. And the Democrats have typically been scared of this issue and not wanted to make it an issue, but I don't think they have a choice. This is going to be one of the things that is a major talking point in November and leading up to November. Now, whether or not they, like you said, they actually got some legislation passed in Florida. I gather they've made some movement in a couple other states that they've been working on. Nationally, even nationally, the Congress within the omnibus did a handful of very small things, but still things that were on the, you know, like I believe there was a thing that's allowing the CDC to do investigations on guns again.
Right. By the way, Trump apparently believes that he's banned bump stocks.
Yes, because he said something about it. He directed his one of the agencies to look into it, but he thinks it's done.
He thinks it's done.
Yeah, but now and the CDC thing, there's no funding for it, so nothing's actually going to happen. But they've eliminated the restriction. So even on the federal level, there have been a couple little things that have happened, which you never would have expected before. Now, do I expect anything further to be able to happen on, you know, Congress is done.
Democrats won, could win Congress.
Congress is done until the election, no matter what, essentially. Nothing major is going through the Congress in the last months before an election. If Democrats win the Congress, who knows? I mean, you still got Trump potentially doing veto, but who the fuck knows what Trump would do? He might.
Right. Who the hell knows what Trump will do with the Democratic Congress? I mean, seriously. I don't know.
Because, you know, again, at Trump's very first meeting about gun control, he was going all over like, we're going to do this and we're going to do that. And he was basically agreeing to every Democratic
Congress are the ones who walk them back, you know, and they have the majority. So therefore, it's like they're the ones that are going to put the bill on the table. But, you know, he gets the bill on the table from whatever. And he thinks, listen, what does Trump like more than anything?
Winning.
And yes!
Well, and money.
And money! Although he's not very good at making it, but he likes winning and money. So,
and women who look like Ivanka.
And women that, oh God, Jesus. Yes, and women that like look like his daughter. Fuck. God. Yeah, that's very obvious.
Anyway, like, you know, I suspect... Yeah, most likely, though, even if we get the Democrats taking the House, which is still likely but not inevitable, the Senate is unlikely, and the Senate's definitely not getting 60 votes, so you can still get things blocked in the Senate. So I don't know that how much we'll actually get, and certainly anybody like fantasizing about, you know, a constitutional amendment to repeal the Second Amendment, I'm sorry. that's not happening in our lifetimes.
Wait, I'm not going to say that, but it certainly not happen anytime soon.
No, okay. Hopefully we will live a long, long time, and a lot can happen in a long, long time.
Right, exactly.
But, of all sorts. But yeah, that's not happening anytime soon. Constitutional amendment is a really, really tough lift, and you really need to have a national consensus on an issue to get a constitutional amendment through. And there is nothing even remotely like a national consensus on this issue right now. Okay, I think we're done with the march and gun control and all that. Let's take a break and we'll talk about Facebook and tech companies and ethics and privacy and all of that stuff. I was going to call it nonsense, but it's not really nonsense.
It's not nonsense. No.
We will be back right after this.
Alex and the West.com. Being Alex and Dad. Gaming videos and more from Alex. Elementary school by day, YouTube by night, AlexMZilla.com. AlexMZilla is AlexMXELA, and .com is period and then COM.
Okay, we are back. So last week, my wife Brandy and I talked a little bit about Cambridge Analytica and their involvement and whether or not how significant that was. And the fundamental conclusion I had there was the targeting stuff was interesting, but pretty much, you know, it's everybody's doing that kind of stuff, and it's probably overblown how much better Cambridge Analytica's stuff was than anybody else. And the really unique stuff about Cambridge Analytica was how they were involved in dirty tricks and how they were encouraging people not to vote rather than people to vote in certain circumstances and that kind of stuff. But I sort of, last week we sort of left out, I mean, we talked about it a little bit, but we sort of didn't dive into the more general privacy concerns, because the bottom line is what's happening in the last couple weeks is all of a sudden people are starting to pay attention to the kind of stuff that privacy advocates have been saying about Facebook and Twitter and Google and everybody else for like a decade. In terms of how much they're collecting, how much they have, how it's being sold. Oh, and I should mention not only those, but like, you know, ISPs and telcos and those kinds of companies as well are massively collecting all the data going through them and doing commercial things with them. And so now all of a sudden people are like, oh my God, I can't believe this is happening. I can't believe Facebook has all this information about me.
Well, look, you and I had this conversation a long, long time ago.
Yeah.
When this whole thing started, at least for me, when free email services started.
Yeah.
And that I always said, nah, I'm not switching my email to a free email service. You're like, why? Because if you read many of the terms of service for those, the free ones specifically, how they could they were giving you ads. They would harvest your emails in order to see what marketing messages they could have. You were basically, by doing that,
that was the whole point of how they thought they would make this viable, is instead of you paying for it, they'd target ads at you, and that's how they'd make their money.
And harvest information about you. And I was just like, fuck no, I'm not doing this. The hell with that. And, but people – and I thought, people have to be crazy to sign up for these free services. But then, everybody did.
Well, and to be fair, part of it, the free services were really good too.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I have never – like you, I've never jumped into it. I think I tested a Gmail account once, but I never really used it. I never got into it. I didn't like the interface. I liked my old-fashioned way of doing things, and so I didn't jump, because I am indeed a curmudgeon, yes. But so many people I know are on Gmail and love it. They love how it's integrated into everything else. It's the smartest, if anything, that I know of at the moment in terms of, filtering out the spam and classifying what you get and surfacing the most important things. It's a good service, but there's a trade-off.
Right. You basically have no privacy in there at all. And so, I still have people, even the, so still like do a double take when I give my email address. I happen to have a .Mac account. Now, what the hell? Yeah, okay. Well, it's not. It's
iCloud. And I, of course, have my own domain name, which people are also like, what?
Yeah.
Abuse me? What's that?
So I have like that. And I've, but .Mac was always it's always been a paid service. Right. And a lot of people get iCloud accounts. But they don't use the email for whatever reason. But and I find it always like a little bit disturbing because Apple explicitly has policies that say that they will not use your information that way.
And Tim Cook was talking about that this week.
Yes. I mean, specifically, they have policies that actually don't do that, which is the reason why I use their service, for which I pay.
And just to be clear, they're not the only ones. I have my own domain name, but I actually pay an email hosting provider to host the actual email. And there are a number of services to do that, but they're relatively obscure these days,
right?
Because most people have their free service of one sort or another. I mean, if it's not Gmail, which is by far the biggest right now, or Hotmail or something
Yahoo
like that,
or Hotmail,
they're still, the ones that come with your internet service or whatever,
right?
There are things like that, but it's not just email. It is Facebook. It's Twitter. It's your Facebook. Like you said, on Google, it's your searches. And one of the things that's less known is that ISPs and telcos are very much looking at what your traffic is when you're using their services and using that information as well.
Of course, that information is less personalized, but still, because, you're going through a big pipe, but still, anyway. Yes,
well, but they're tracking it on an individual level, like, somewhere, like, if you've got...
At a household level, I get that. They can track it, but it's like, look, they're seeing through here. I mean, it's like, is it my wife? Is it me? Is it my son?
Well, no, but at a telco level, you've got your phone. You've probably got AT&T or something.
Oh, yeah. We're talking about ISP. No, if you're talking about the individual phones,
ISPs and telcos, and they're both doing it.
Yeah.
So there's all kinds of information harvesting, and they're doing all kinds of different things. And if anybody ever actually does read all those terms of services, which nobody ever does, it lets them do whatever the fuck they want. That's the bottom line. And so, some of them promise to anonymize some things, but of course they can change that at any time. And one of the things that's been shown over the last decade or a little bit more of research is that even if information is anonymized, it's actually really, really easy. It only takes two or three pieces of information to make it unique to you again and de-anonymize you if somebody wants to, you know, so you know, there's sort of this freak out this week because it's connected to the 2016 stuff, and it's connected to Donald Trump, and it's connected to Cambridge Analytica. But this is not new. This is not different. This is fundamental. Like, if you look at Facebook, this is their business model. Their business model is to collect and monetize your information. This is also Google's business model. You know, this is what they do. This is not, you know, I mean, there's the old phrase, which I guess isn't that old, but has been around a while at this point, that if you're not paying for the service, then you're the product. And
right.
And
correct.
And, you know, so far, so many people have, like you said, people have made the decision that this is worth it to them. Now, there's a question on how much do they really understand and internalize what is being collected and what is being done with that information. Now, to some degree, I suspect if that was required to be really and truly fully disclosed, like every single time the company shares your information with somebody else, it flashes in your face that they're doing it. You know, something like that. More people would be disturbed by it than are today. But I still suspect, and I mentioned this on the show last week with my wife, I still suspect a majority of people would be like, okay, whatever. I get my free whatever, and it's worth it to me. And I don't really care that they're sharing that. And I think that would probably still be the majority opinion. Now, I suspect that the minority who cares would increase dramatically if there was just more public awareness of exactly what was really going on. I mean, you can get and download these various, tracker things that show you just how much is going on. What's the name of the one I use? Ghostery. You can Google it or whatever. It's Ghostery, and you can install it on whatever browser you're using, and it'll show a little display whenever you go to a website, all the trackers that are active on that page, and then it'll let you selectively block them if you want to, but it'll just show them to you. And you know, and also, you know, there's ad blockers as well, that you can see how different the internet is without those ads, because those ads are also taking up,
oh god, yes,
yeah. You know, I've had ad blockers on all my browsers for years and years now. So, like, whenever I see a browser that doesn't have them, I'm like, what the hell happened?
You're, confused. Like, what is all this shit?
Exactly. But all of that weight is also, people have complained about performance and slowness. Well, you know, people have done surveys of common, like, websites that people go to, especially like news sites and things like that. And like 90% of the payload of what you're loading on the page is the ads and trackers, you know, as compared to the actual content you're going there for. But right now, in order to get any of that, and even then, even if I install Ghostery and see, okay, I go to this web page and there's 15 trackers on this page, I don't know what those 15 companies are doing, what exactly they're collecting, how are they mixing it with other stuff? Because part of this is also not just, you know, oh, Facebook is keeping track of what I like on Facebook. That's just the beginning of it. Because, you know, other pages have the little Facebook like buttons on it. Whenever you go to a page that has that Facebook like button, they know you've been there too, you know, and then they correlate these things to all kinds of other things. One of the things I was reading this week is how, you know, Facebook has an internal project that actually builds profiles of people who don't have Facebook accounts based on how other people who know those people mention or interact with them.
Oh,
you know. Yeah.
Ew.
Exactly.
I guess I can see that. I was thinking, like, for example, like how my son doesn't have a Facebook profile, but I post pictures and stuff about him, right?
Yeah. So Facebook Facebook knows you have a son. Facebook knows his name. Facebook knows other people who've interacted with him. You know, so there's already a Manu profile somewhere in Facebook of like this thing exists. Probably. Who knows? But I mean, that's part of what's been reported in the last few weeks. And, you know, I think, you know, and there were there was a quote and that I mentioned on our Slack, and Yvonne sort of said, it's not as bad as it sounds. But there was a memo that came out from 2016. Where a Facebook executive was basically talking about, you know, hey, there may be some questionable things we do to get growth in terms of importing people's address books and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, we're all about connections and we're getting people connected, and none of the other good stuff that Facebook has would be there without getting this scale and without getting this growth. And, you know, I mean, the thing that got the headlines was he said, you know, and some people will probably even die because some people will be bullied or somebody will organize a terrorist attack using our tools or whatever. But
my point is what I said is that's not as bad as it sounds. The reason I said that is that you can make the same argument or statement about any technology that we own.
Yes, you could. But the interesting thing, I think the fact that he was talking about death sort of overshadows what to me was the more important part of that, which was just this philosophy of growth at all costs, essentially. It's saying that there may be shortcuts we take and things that aren't quite ethical, and so he called them questionable, that we're going to do in order to drive the growth. And I think this is an attitude that is very common. I mean, probably across more industries, but specifically within the tech industry, of sort of this notion that we're doing cool things with tech and we're going to change the world and we're just providing a platform and we don't have to worry about the implications of it. We don't have to worry about the ethics. That's kind of not our job. And what I said on Twitter, and I've said to a few other people in private conversations, is I think what we're seeing now is sort of the beginning of this process, but I think the whole tech industry is going to come to a reckoning at some point with pushing and pushing and pushing without slowing down and thinking of the ethics. They're maximizing growth, they're maximizing profits, they're maximizing their stock, whatever. All short term, because everybody's thinking about the next quarter or the next two quarters or whatever. And they're almost intentionally putting on blinders, saying we don't want to think about these larger ethical concerns. We don't want to think about
part of this problem is lack of regulation. You know, why they don't want to think about all those ethical concerns or anything that is complicated. Because, you know, like traditional media was heavily regulated. There was a lot of regulations. Like, for example, one of the things that you go in there, like political ads, right? Political ads on TV, you had to disclose who paid for the money. You know, they had to go through certain things. How you can't on certain types of media, for example, whatever the heck you accept that is being transmitted, you're responsible for transmitting, you know, bad content or whatever. You could be punished for that, and so forth and so on. But there are no such regulations around for. They just don't exist. So, like you said, they're taking this approach. It's like, we just built the platform, whatever goes through there. And I think it's very painfully clear that some regulation needs to be in place in order to regulate how these operate.
Well, and see, like, I look at that and I'm like, you know, I really don't want to jump right to regulation because government usually gets it wrong.
They got it so wrong about television or radio.
Well, you know, look, here's the thing. Especially in tech type stuff, I mean, it's clear looking at any Senate hearing that talks about tech that these people don't know what the fuck they're talking about. They don't understand the tech. True. They don't understand the implications. They don't necessarily respect.
Well, that's why they haven't done anything.
Well, and the thing is, like, it seems like the government tendency normally is to overreact and put in regulations that are constraining in ways that hobble certain types of developments, because they're what they end up doing is not like really protecting, you know, the final consumer interest. They end up protecting the industries that are already there, or putting in regulations that are so tough to follow that only big mega corporations have the resources to do it, and small upstarts can't. And so they therefore stifle innovation. And so I really want to be really, really super careful. This is one of the areas where I am a little bit more libertarian and I'm a little bit more conservative.
But let
me finish my point. I don't believe in no regulation here. I just want to be careful. However, if the companies don't do jack, if the companies almost by they're so stubborn that they're refusing to look into these things and intentionally looking another way and saying, this is not my problem, or I don't want to think about it. I think Facebook's just starting to reckon with it now because they've been called out on it so much.
Right, because they've been getting hammered on it.
But, you know, the other companies who aren't getting hammered are sort of like, well, at least they're not looking at us yet. You know, because in the way to avoid regulation is for the companies to actually be responsible to begin with. And being responsible means you're not just thinking about the bottom line. You're also actually spend some time thinking, yes, I could do this. Yes, it would make me a lot of money, but is it the right thing to do? Is it the responsible thing to do? Or should I hold back a little bit? And, you know, and that's not a very natural thing for a company to do, especially a public company that is responsible for maximizing their share price and all this kind of stuff. This is not a natural position to be in. But if you don't go there, then at some point you're going to get to the point where you're doing things where people are just going to demand regulation on it. And then you're likely to get all the kind of regulatory mistakes I just mentioned. And so if these companies could only think more than 3 months in the future and think about how what they're doing affects things over the next 5 years, 10 years, 15 years, then maybe some of this would come into play. But I mean, even then, it's like you want the people who are running these things to actually just, I think in many cases, the thought doesn't even enter the mind of like, hey, is what we're doing the correct, ethical, right thing to do? It's very often a cost benefit analysis and do we have to do this? Can we get away with not doing it? I mean, we've talked about this in the security space as well with all these companies who instead of quote unquote doing the right thing and actually protecting all their fucking data so it doesn't get breached every other day. We just had Under Armour breached today with another 150 million accounts of fitness data hacked. Instead of actually doing something about that, they take the approach of, we'll eat the cost when it happens. We'll buy insurance against it, whatever, because they're not starting with the, what's the right thing to do here? And I think so many of these companies are eventually going to find themselves in really sticky positions because they haven't slowed down and thought about these things and done the right thing to begin with.
Well, they haven't. And I don't think they're going to do anything unless it's regulated. I don't think they're going to do anything significant. I happened before with like the whole Equifax breach. I think even the Facebook thing, I mean, people started talking about deleting their accounts or whatever. I don't think that that's going to happen. I don't think that's happening right now. I really do believe that.
Well, and I've seen a few people like talking on Twitter about, okay, here's another opportunity to like, somebody can start up a paid service that gives me a way to share information with my family and blah, 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 and doesn't do all this other shit. And it's a big opportunity. And I'm still not convinced. I mean, maybe if people start caring a lot more than they do today, maybe it is. But so far, like every time somebody tried a couple years ago to set up a paid version of Twitter that wouldn't be advertiser driven and all this kind of stuff, and it failed in like a year. you know, because the number of people who were willing to actually put out the money to pay for it wasn't sustainable. And I suspect if somebody tried to put out their Facebook clone tomorrow and said, yeah, it's Facebook.
It's $25 a month.
Yeah, it's Facebook with no tracking, but it's $25 a month. People would be like, well, fuck that shit. I mean, even at $10 a month, you know, people aren't going to. And you also have the chicken and egg problem of, like, who's going to be the first person to jump over there? You know, it's no good until all your friends are over there.
Well, I know that I'm going to reactivate my Friendster account. I think that may be my plan.
Yeah.
Are he's still out there? I thought they shut down.
I think they did at some point. I don't know.
We did this recap a while back of services that went kaput. Yeah, was
Friendster taking a break. The redesigned Friendster came about.
I love it. I love them.
However, due to the evolving landscape and our challenging industry, the online it turned into a gaming site at some point. The online gaming community did not engage as much as we had hoped for. We have thus made the decision to take a break and pause our services effective June 14th, 2015.
It's been a long break.
That's at Friendster.com. And of course, the Friendster that's here isn't the Friendster we're all remembering because it turned into a gaming site at some point, but whatever. Anyway, I think you're right. I mean, like, the attention we're getting right now will cause a few companies to do a few relatively small things. I mean, Facebook has been getting the most attention, and they're like, oh, we'll finally take all our privacy preferences that were scattered in 20 different places and put them in one place. Woo. You know, it's better, but, you know, it's still like the problem is with the defaults. The problem is that the fundamental business model is built on harvesting your data. And as long as that's true, you're always going to have concerns here. But again, the question is, how many people care? I mean, and I theoretically care, but, you know, I haven't gone and locked down Facebook. I mean, I don't really use it very much. The only thing on Facebook is pretty much the posts announcing this podcast, and I don't do much else on there. But, you know, I will look at other people's posts, and I'll like things, and I'll do a little sad face when somebody posts something sad. So I guess I am doing that. But yeah, I think you're right, though, that there won't be any major change here. And the question, whether it's legislation or companies doing things on their own, neither one of those things will ever happen unless you reach a certain critical mass of people being upset and disturbed by it. And although I think we've seen an increase in the people upset and disturbed about it, I don't think we're anywhere near that critical mass at this point.
You know, MySpace is some kind of music website.
Yeah, I knew that.
I mean, okay. All right. Just welcome to MySpace. Just start typing to find music. How the fuck? Okay. All right, then. Okay, well, that's not an option. Okay, we're not moving to MySpace. This kind of sucks.
Okay. Yeah. Right. And we had Alta, you know, we had other search engines.
Google Plus went kaput, right?
No, Google Plus is still around.
It is? I thought they said they were shutting it down.
It's evolved in various ways, as of most of these. But I saw
I just tried to search for it. I couldn't even find it.
Plus.google.com.
Plus.google.com.
Anyway, I saw someone comment this week that Google at this point must be really, really happy that Google Plus failed, because otherwise they'd probably be catching all the same kind of flack.
Oh, there I am! Oh, my God! I'm on Google Plus!
Yeah.
And I didn't know! I'll be damned. Oh, actually, it's suggesting to me a whole bunch of people. Yeah. Wow. Who there am I go. Following? I have 8 friends in my circles. Wow. You're one of them!
Yeah. Exciting, wow. Isn't it?
Wow. That's pretty amazing. Wow.
Anyway, I think we're done here.
We are? Okay.
I think, yeah. So, are you deleting your Facebook, Yvonne?
Not really, no.
Are you deleting your Twitter?
I wasn't planning on it.
deleting your Google account?
I will say that I have come to the conclusion that I think that the Earth would be a much happier place probably without both Twitter and Facebook.
You know, as addicted as I am to Twitter, you might be right.
I mean, Twitter is a miserable fucking place to be in. And I actually have been starting to consider whether I should even read Twitter anymore. Because it is just utterly just a fucking cesspool of just...
Well, but this
shit. And they,
but
and
this I'm all thinking, again depends. It depends on how you curate your own Twitter. Like,
No. Because the problem is that the trolls are out there, no matter what the hell the subject is what I'm finding out. You know, it doesn't matter what the subject is. And the other problem is that you've got a whole generation of people who, basically, you know. Like, okay, I insulted my father online. I know my father. I would insult him in person the same way. The reality is that I am not behaving online differently how I would talk to him if he was in person. Okay? In his case. All right? But a lot of people are yelling at people online on a regular basis in a way that they would never dare to
do. And people they don't even know.
And people to people they don't even know.
Right.
You see, because, you know, and that's my problem, okay? The fact that you've got this entire generation of people who don't seem to appreciate that if they type on your timeline that, you know, all of these dumbasses, you're calling all my friends dumbasses on my fucking timeline? Listen, you stupid fuck. They would never do that in person.
Just a couple of segments ago, or last segment, when we were talking about these Parkland kids.
Yeah.
And we were talking about how they didn't have any compulsion about going and telling a senator to go fuck themselves when they thought the senator was wrong.
I know. I get it.
You were saying that was a good thing. We were saying that was a good thing in the first segment. Now, essentially, you're saying the same thing.
I'm saying, listen, what I said is that they don't have a problem being attacked to how to respond was the context that we were talking about. So they were far more able to deal with these constant attacks. I still don't think it's a good thing that this is what it's devolved to.
Okay.
The fact that they know how to defend themselves in that environment doesn't mean that the environment itself is good. I don't like the environment this is created and the discourse this is created. In large part because everybody is like yelling at each other in a way that they wouldn't if they were there in person.
I can see that. But there have also been some very positive interactions I've seen on Twitter and other social media. So there's a trade-off. I don't know.
Okay, if you measure the percentage, how much of the interaction you see right now in Twitter is positive versus negative?
This is probably more negative than positive.
Substantially more, I would say. And you probably agree.
Okay. Well, we're not deleting any of our accounts.
I'm not deleting the damn account, but it still doesn't mean I really like it.
So you can follow us. I'm at Abulsme, A-B-U-L-S-M-E, on Twitter. Yvonne is at I-M-B-O-U.
And feel comfortable to know the fact that if I tell you to go fuck yourself on social media, it's very likely that if I did that, I would probably tell you that in person.
And do you welcome people telling you to go fuck yourself?
If I apparently deserve it. I mean, there have been times I have deserved to be slammed down. I'm okay.
Be aware that Yvonne will respond in kind.
Yes.
There you go. And as usual, facebook.com/curmudgeonscorner. Go like us, share with your friends. I've noticed since we haven't been promoting the Facebook with advertising, it's a dead zone, to be honest. They're not that we get more action in the Curmudgeon's Corner Slack than we do on the Facebook at this point.
Yes.
And it's because Facebook intentionally, like, if you're not paying to promote things by like Facebook pages like that, nobody sees them. Even the people who've actually like button. So I don't know why I keep bothering to tell people to go to Facebook and share us and all that kind of stuff. Because I don't know.
it's okay. Some people see it. I mean, you know, when I share it under timeline, it may not be the same, but, you know, still getting some traction. Yeah.
Anyway, still, go to Facebook, like us. If you really like the show, as usual, we tell you to go to patreon.com/curmudgeonscorner. You can throw us a couple bucks. At the $2 a month level, you get access to the Curmudgeons Corner Slack, where you can come and argue with Yvonne and I and a few of our other loyal listeners who are on there and contributing ideas and thoughts about what we should talk about on the next show and all of that kind of stuff. So fun things. And I think that's all I have to say, Yvonne. Do you have anything else to say?
Nope.
Okay, everybody, have a great week. We'll talk to you next time. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Yvonne.
Thank you.